Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is Shirley Stolzer along with Flo Joseph interviewing Dr. Barbara Schur. This is our third interview with her in her office at the University of Pittsburgh. Dr. Schur, would you just tell us your name?
Yes, I am Barbara Schur, and I am in my office in the cathedral talking with Florence and talking with Shirley.
On this day of February 24, 1993.
That ruling. There it is.
At our last session, as I recall, we were talking about the fact that you received your PhD and you started to teach here at the University of the School of Social Work. And I wondered whether there was one aspect of social work that you were interested in teaching, were there any courses that you designed yourself for teaching purposes?
Okay, when I started to teach, which was right after I came on faculty, mm-hmm. I did a foundations course and a casework methods course. Mm-hmm. And then I became, within several years after I got here, the director of the casework division. Mm-hmm. In 72, we redid, 71, 72, we redid the whole curriculum. And so it changed in its character. And I then became head of the poverty cluster, which was one of our concentrations. Subsequently head of the health mental health cluster, and then became director of the doctoral program. For courses I taught a number of courses. The ones that I helped create are Death and Dying, which mm-hmm. I created with my dear friend and colleague Lois Jaffe, mm-hmm. who in 74, I believe, developed leukemia and subsequently died from it by 78 or I think around 78.
Yes.
She was a wonderful, wonderful teacher and clinician, and I started with her in developing that course, and then within the first year, she decided that she really would not want to take major responsibility. So I then took that course, and I've taught it ever since, and it's been taught all three semesters because there's always such a demand for it.
Mm-hmm.
So this semester is the first I haven't taught it since 1974. Somebody else is teaching it now. We'll teach it in the summer, and I'll teach it again next fall. So we'll keep offering it if there's a demand for it over three semesters. One of the other courses I helped to create is the family violence course. And I've worked on that with a colleague, and we have been teaching that. I think it's just the fourth year that we completed, and that's, I think, been a very important course. I've taught, I did create a research course called Assessment of Research, which is a master's level course, and I taught that up till now. I won't be teaching that again, and I don't know if anybody else will or not. I don't think that's been decided yet. And then I taught a number of methods courses, a number of doctoral level courses. I created one in mental health policy for the doctoral program, taught the microsocial science theory course, which now one of my colleagues is teaching this semester since I've retired. And I have taught a number of other courses over the years, both methods courses and some substantive courses.
But was there any one that was more rewarding to teach than another, or in the whole field of teaching, was there something that was particularly rewarding for you?
Well, I think the Death and Dying course probably. First, I had, in a sense, an influence on so many people that took it, since it was a course that was taught all three semesters after the first couple of years because it kept filling up. So that's probably the one that has been most significant. And we began to teach that really before that was quite such popular content. It's now not unusual to find that course, although strangely here at the university there is no other graduate course taught. So I always have gotten lots of nurses, some doctors, lots of psychology majors, doctoral or master's level psychology people, and School of Education counselor types, the counselor ed people, because they do not have anywhere else to go for that course.
I think it's interesting that the course names that you've given me have been very much related to things that have gone on in the community here, which was not the case when I was at the school. It isn't quite as generic as it was at that time.
Right.
What made you decide to go on to the School of Public Health?
Well, I have been interested in public health and its relationship to social work for some time. So that even if I hadn't come in the doctoral program, which I did, I think I would have wanted to go over there and get a master's in public health. I had been very interested in public health issues, which I think are very relevant to social work. And the social welfare issues and the public health issues are really so intertwined. It offers a wonderful theoretical conceptual base for much of the concerns of social workers.
Did you do any actual teaching once you came finished that course here? Were you connected for students?
I've been an adjunct. I've had an adjunct appointment over in public health, and they have asked me to do teaching on and off over there, so I have done that.
But there were there social work students in that course?
Yes, there often were. Because there are two kinds of social work students over there. Those in our joint program, we have a joint program, which was what I was part of, with public health and our doctoral program here. And we've had that for many, many years. We're one of the few in the country that have survived the cutbacks in funds. And so our program is really a grandmother, granddaddy of joint programs around the country. And then there are social work people who, with the same interest I've had in health issues, who have get their degrees over there in public health. So there are always some social workers wandering about over there that may have already gotten their master's. And then there are doctoral students that are over there, and there are always several of those a year, plus other social work people working in health settings and mental health settings also that come over there.
But did you initiate or originate some programs in the school social work as a result of your classes at the School of Public Health?
Well, we already had the joint program, which is what I was part of where I got my degree. And we did for a while in the health emphasis require that our students go over there and take epidemiology. It didn't work very well because a lot of our students really had trouble with that course because they didn't have the statistics background. And so after a while, it was when I was head of the health mental health cluster, we decided to make that elective in nature and not required. But we have done joint and we have joint courses that get cross-listed all the time, and I am part of the advisory committee there. So we interact, and the person who is a social work person in charge of the joint program over there is part of our doctoral faculty, too. So that we have several of us with adjunct appointments there, and then he has an adjunct appointment here at our school.
I was looking over your curriculum vitae, and I was amazed by the wide range of interests where you have worked on programs in regard to either written or spoken about these, women's issues, stress management, death and dying, I know from what you just said, pre-retirement, such a way. How did you manage to pull in all these issues to work on, either to write about or to speak about to groups?
One of my major interests for so many years now has been the field of aging. So I've done a lot of work in that area, both research and publishing, but also consulting and teaching courses here. And another one has been women. I've been extremely interested in the whole arena. I have done research. In fact, I just had an article published in Aphilia, which is the Women's Social Work Journal, with two of my colleagues on a study of the impact of unemployment on women. It was a study we did out in the Mon Valley. But I have a range of interests around women. I've been particularly fascinated by. So those have been two of my very major interests. I've done a lot of work in the field of children, too. And my original emphasis was not only psychiatric, but was in work with children. So I've retained that interest.
Yeah, I remember in Chicago you did work on children.
Right, so I worked at Jewish Children's Bureau.
Right. Some of that interest.
Right, yes. And I've been active with Children and Youth Service and did that study in 1985 that the county commissioners asked me to do with a large and wonderful committee to examine what goes on with Children and Youth Services. And I've continued on that board. And
what was the name of that magazine you said that you Affilia, did your latest?
AFFILIA, the January edition. It's a newish journal focusing on women's issues in social work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And when you think about, you've made a lot of contributions in the field. What do you view as your most significant contribution in the field of the of social work itself?
Mm-hmm.
Either in study or in practice, can you?
Well, I would suppose that it would be, there are several things that would strike me. One is that I've really always tried to build a linkage between professional social work and academia and what goes on in the field out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always felt a particular responsibility to build that kind of linkage and to provide professional social work with connections to what is happening in the field, both by professional social workers and by more grassroots people and so forth. And I've had a large interest in that for some time. So I felt an obligation, in a sense, to be that kind of a linkage person. And I provide a lot of consultation and assistance to small, little struggling, particularly alternative agencies.
Are these the agencies that you sought out to see if there was some activity where you could give up yourself,
usually,
or did they come after
usually
you?
Usually they come finding me.
I see.
But when they try to come and find me, if it seems of importance to me, then I've been willing to offer my services, generally without fee, generally with small little struggling groups. It says.
Can you think of some of the
Well,
those
I think, and you were aware of this group, I think, I did do the work that helped set up the Single Women and Midlife Project,
yes,
you know.
Yes, I was there for a while.
Right. And, and actually, the person that founded it came to me, and I agreed to work with it. So I felt I helped to give it some professional legitimacy and some professional grounding.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with that for some years.
Now, are you still with it?
Well, they're not functioning
now. Oh, they're
now,
not functioning.
Right. And I've worked with a number of the women's centers and shelters, and some of them not just in Pittsburgh, but some in the outlying areas,
oh, really?
Many of which were really alternative structures in that they didn't have mainstream money, they didn't really have mainstream staff. Most of them now do, but in their early stages, which was in the early 70s, they didn't. And so I tried to provide that kind of stabilization. And that seemed important. And I was a founding member of a number of those groups, including a Rape Crisis Center, which is now the Center for Victims of Violent Crimes. I was a charter member of that board, and of PERSED, which is the center that services sexual minorities. And I was one of the incorporators and a charter member of that board.
Mm-hmm.
So that I've had a lot of mainstream connections too, but those have been, I mean, that's been one of the things I've seen as important for professional social workers and people in academia to do, is to provide that linkage and make sure that as those alternative structures get going, that they do it in a way that's helpful and not hurtful to people.
But as a member of the board, were you able to also assist from your professional know-how with the workers, or did you just give your ideas at the board meeting?
No, I helped with a lot of the training in a lot of those places. Did a lot of the training and helped to develop their training, their supervision, their oversight, and their policies.
So this was really a volunteer activity on your part?
Very much so. I mean, there are a lot of places where I did consult and got paid, but I never treated, and I still don't believe, that consultation of that sort is necessarily a way for me to augment my income. I mean,
right.
My income was adequate.
No, but I just...
So I mean, not all of our faculty ever believed that, but I believed that. And so if they didn't have the money, they didn't have the money. That was, I mean, my salary wasn't docked because I went off and did. I mean, that's one of the nice things about being at the university is that you really have a lot of control over your time, busy
you
as you may
arrange.
Be, and you can, and you get support. I mean, that's something that, in fact, I'm about to be named a distinguished service professor Friday at Honors Convocation.
Oh, very
nice. And it is related to a number of those activities that I was noted for.
Were you noted from the School of Social Work or from the University of Pittsburgh?
University.
I see. And do you know what all you did that they are taking into account?
Yes, they talked about my service to children and child welfare, my service to a number of other community groups, and my service to ethnic and cultural bridge building and so forth.
Are any of your children going to join and see you?
They
receive the honor?
They can't.
That would be
no
nice.
There's no way for them to get in here, right?
I'm sure your husband will be
Oh,
there.
Of course. And all my relatives that are in Pittsburgh.
Good. They're going to come.
They'll come.
Right. That's
but
very
it
nice.
Is very nice.
That's going to be here.
That's over at Connecticut Music Hall at Honors Convocation. So that'll be lovely.
We'll look for your picture in the newspaper.
We'll see. But that's very nice.
Yes.
And that is an acknowledgement of the fact that at universities they say that you get noted for and promoted for research, teaching, and public service. But rarely, until recently, has there been much of a way of giving recognition to people for public service. This is the first time these distinguished professorships will be offered for public service.
Mm-hmm. So you're the one?
No, there are five.
One among many?
No, I'm five.
Five.
There are five noted for public service, five for teaching, and five for research. But this is the first they ever did public service.
Good. Very nice. We're very proud to be talking to you under
those
circumstances.
I'm really pleased. I think it's
I know you've received a number of awards, and one of them was through the National Council of Jewish Women, and that was the Hannah G. Solomon Award. What was the nature of that?
Well, I presume that they chose me because I had offered a huge amount of volunteer service, particularly to single women in midlife, but to a number of other projects there. But SWIM was one of the most notable, I think, in terms of the amount of time that went into organizing that program. And I did the supervision along with another social worker, Sonia Paleas, and I did the training. And all of that with that project for some many years that it lasted.
For the record, what does SWIM stand for?
A Single Women in Midlife.
Okay.
And it was for divorced and widowed women of a certain age. We said 55 up, but we really never turned anyone away. Mm-hmm. So we got older, we got younger. But we really targeted that midlife population.
What do you think was the reason that it didn't go on? Because for a while there, it was really quite strong, as I recall.
Yeah, I think what happened is that the original founders began to wear out Marla and several of the others. And we never did get a second group to move in and assume the kind of volunteer responsibility that was necessary.
Yeah,
and the biggest part of that was doing the intake, taking the calls and doing the matching with the peer counselors.
Oh, yes.
And we did have several different people that agreed to do it, and they just never followed through the way Marla did. And she just got tired. I mean, it was many years, and she was moving on to other stages of her life. Actually, she came into the School of Social Work. She was about to graduate. And she was ready.
That was your influence, right?
Well, I suppose. So, you know, that happens in organizations with volunteers. They do get burned out. And they lasted, those women, many years. But they were wonderful.
I know.
And I think part of psychologically what happens, too, is that the business of being a widowed or a divorced woman didn't stay as central in everybody's life after the time you expect people to be ready
to move out and
re-identify themselves, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I think that did happen to a number of those women.
Probably. Tell me, are you focusing any of your activities within the Jewish community specifically?
No, I'm chair of the Human Rights Committee of the Community Relations Council. And as such, am active with a number of activities that we have carried out.
I see.
We did the Gay Jewish Experience, that program last year, which was very successful. We're working with the Special Needs Committee and have mounted several programs related to special needs. And we're looking to, in fact, we're meeting this week to probably plan out very possibly a large conference on poverty.
Within the Jewish community?
Well, probably not on poverty within the Jewish community, but we will be the Jewish community presence in what we hope. Maybe Carnegie Mellon may join with us in doing this. But we want to look at poverty, both within the Jewish community but elsewhere too.
I see.
And so that's probably going to be our next big project for the Human Rights Committee. I'm also on a couple of other federation committees. I was part of the UCLA Study Committee that looked at the aging situation in the Jewish community just this past year under the auspices of Federation, mm-hmm. and has come up with a series of recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
I've served with National Council on the committee that's been sort of looking at and overseeing and commenting on what we think is going on at the home in terms of care,
yes.
quality care and lack of it at times, and also helping with the implementation committee. I'm on that committee of the Ukuleles, from the Ukuleles report, you know, to carry forth, and so I've been active with that. His name is UKUELES, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
He's a social worker from somewhere, New York, I guess,
yes.
Who was contracted to come in and do a study.
I see.
And it was a study on the situation for aging Jews
mm-hmm.
and the level of service and what needs to be done. So there's now an implementation committee that's struggling on to get some implementation.
But that was through this humanitarian group?
No, that was through
separate?
A different part of the United Jewish Federation.
But part of Federation.
It's Federation,
effort.
Right.
I see.
And then, as I say, I've worked with National Council on some oversight stuff that they've been doing or have done with the Jewish home in particular
mm-hmm.
because
yes.
there's some concerns that had arisen there.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the, and I'm also on, and was a founding board member of Council Care, which is, you know, the adult
yes.
daycare program.
Yes.
And that the council has sponsored, but which is housed at...
the courthouse. Is
no,
that the
no,
courthouse
that's
program?
The children's waiting room. Now, this is the adult daycare, and it's housed up at the home.
Yes. Yes.
Now called Riverview Center.
Yes.
And I've been on that board from the beginning, and I chair that long-range planning
mm-hmm.
committee.
And it's operating now.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes, I know it's
buzzing
operating.
Buzzing away. Right.
I know from your vitae that you have received many honors. I only mentioned one because we're members of
right.
National Council. But I just wondered, was there any one of those honors of which you were particularly proud?
Well, I think all of them, really.
Sure.
I mean, they were all lovely. The Hannah G. Solomon Award was just lovely, and the YW... Well, that's the plaque there was
uh-huh.
quite beautiful,
uh-huh.
and they've all been really just wonderful.
Uh-huh.
And the Distinguished Service Professor, I think, is
yes.
particularly quite lovely,
yes.
since it's the first time they've ever given
yes.
that recognition. That will be very, and since it's the year I'm retiring, uh-huh. or half retired, is particularly nice.
And I think you received the Woman of Pennsylvania.
Yes, I'm a Distinguished
twice.
Daughter. Well, I received the. From NASW, the Social Worker of the Year.
Yes.
Two different times, but also I am a
sure.
Distinguished Daughter of Pennsylvania, whatever
mm-hmm.
that may mean. That's fun, and then it
yes, right.
It's nothing but, you know,
uh-huh.
just fun to be part of that.
Was there any award given for your particular expertise as a professor other than the one you're going to get Friday?
Well, I got a Distinguished Alumni Award, which is hanging around here somewhere.
From
the School of Social Work
I
here.
See.
I have that. And then, of course, the Social Work Awards from NASW.
Yes, where you've been active in
mm-hmm.
the community.
Yes, I was very active
yes.
for some years at NASW.
And planning Southwestern Pennsylvania,
well,
too.
Well, and I was president. I was the first chapter president of this when we formed the state chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
right.
on the national board
right.
and chaired the National Program Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And on a couple of other national committees. So I've been active with NASW nationally as well as statewide and locally.
Have there been many changes in the NASW in the years I mean, you started something here in West Lake.
Yeah, I think it's probably gotten more proactive and considerably more visible. It does seem to me that
yes.
that's necessary to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's been an excellent
mm-hmm.
direction for NASW.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was much less visible in the years gone by. Very much more proactive.
And a little bit related to that, I just wondered, during the span of your career in social work, it's been quite a while, can you think of some major changes that have occurred in the field that are significant for us today?
Well, I think that one of the major changes, if we look back over the sweep
right.
of the years, has been that we are not so limited in our vision of ourselves as to think of ourselves only as a caseworker or a community organizer or whatever, but to try to see the broader picture of the interactions between
mm-hmm.
the person and the environment. I mean, we always said we did that, but I think in practice we did not. So we've swung over the years from sort of over-psychologizing to over-sociologizing,
mm-hmm.
you know, saying, well, it's all what's in the person or it's all what's in the community, and to getting much more sophisticated in that ways we look at those interactional factors.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's been extremely important. I think we're much more eclectic in the theory we draw upon and the theory
mm-hmm.
that we teach
yes.
and the theory that people are using in the field,
mm-hmm.
much, much more. Than the years gone by when it was, I think, very much more constricted and restricted. So I think that's been a significant change. A much more eclectic view
of
what motivates people and what motivates communities and how do you produce meaningful change, et cetera. So I think that's all to the good. It's a struggle because people tend to either, I think, over-sociologize or over-psychologize. I mean, the folks that say it's all systems changing tend to be somewhat contentious,
mm-hmm.
historically, I mean,
yes.
of people that work with individuals and families
mm-hmm.
and small groups. But I think, overarchingly, the field of social work, per se, is much broader, much more broadly based than it had been. And I think that's a real significant positive, even though individuals may have difficulty dealing with that.
Yes. But in your preparing social workers today, for example, one time, if you were going to be working in a hospital, you had to have certain courses. If you were going to be working in a family service or you were
mm-hmm.
in a group work setup, does this mean from what you said that it's more
I think it's
broad,
broad. Yeah.
And are they then able to work in these areas?
Well, we think so. The field doesn't always think so. And it really depends on where that agency is, I think, in
mm-hmm.
its own views of itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that we do get sometimes complaints from people saying, well, you have to teach them, for example, with family service, how to work in a family service agency. In our position, generally, has been that some of what they're talking about is really what has to be learned on the job. That doesn't can't be, you can't prepare everybody for everything
mm-hmm.
in 2 years
mm-hmm.
of a master's program.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think that there are certain basic generic things as well as specializations people need to know, but a great deal of that further has to be learned within the field and rather than in
that
the classroom.
That is a different...
And I think, I think that is true. I think it's impossible to teach everybody everything.
Right.
And you assume that 2 years of a master's program will not be the end of their education, but that they will go on with continuing education, with staff development. I mean, if they don't, heaven help us.
Right.
You know, if that
right.
doesn't happen, that you can't assume that they're all totally finished at
right.
the point
at
which
the
they get their
years.
MSW. And
right.
if you do, I think we're in terrible trouble.
Mm-hmm.
We do need to be concerned about social workers adding to their knowledge and adding to their skills over the course of their
mm-hmm.
professional life.
Do you, as a school, encourage the agencies to have their workers come for courses, additional courses?
Well, all field instructors get 6 credits a year,
mm-hmm.
which they can use, and many of them use them, so that
mm-hmm.
does serve as a way of supporting continuing education, and it pays for their credits.
Mm-hmm.
And So that's all to the good. We're probably, we've been without a continuing ed director here for a while because of money problems, but I think we're about to hire, the school is about to hire someone again. So that will be an enormous boon too. We really need to do that, particularly since with licensure, you have to do continuing ed to renew your license.
Right.
So we feel that that has got to be, and I think the dean is marching on to do that.
Do you think also in terms of how you observed others' view of social workers from when you started till now, if there has been modification in that too?
Well, I think social workers are, my own view is that they're considerably more respected than they used to be.
You do?
I do. I think we take a lot of gaff as social workers from everybody under the sun who wishes to beat us over the head with all the social problems. But it's all, and that's not fair, of course, because so many of those social problems are much broader than anything any one given profession or an agency can handle. On the other hand, it is notable to me that whenever there is a social problem being discussed, that somebody will always end up saying, we must call in the social workers. I mean, we are an integral part as social workers of so many systems and looked upon as such. Now, I think our people have to be